Well, the first thing I think he would do would be to stand up and tell the truth. I mean, he had a great expression that was just tell the truth and watch them scatter.
So the further away the problem is, the easier it is to postpone action on it. And that's essentially what we're doing.
Be real. Because people in New Hampshire are really cool.
I'd say get in the game. This is a problem facing your generation. You have to have a voice in the decision.
Welcome to Facing the Future, brought to you by the Concord Coalition on WKXL, New Hampshire's talk radio station. Tune in each week as we dive into topics related to fiscal policy, like healthcare, taxes, national security, the national debt, and more. You will hear discussions with experts, elected officials, and industry leaders on how the nation's fiscal and economic challenges impact current and future generations, and we'll explore some of the solutions. I'm your host and New England Regional Director for the Concord Coalition, Chase Hageman. Today I'll be taking time to speak with Concord's National Field Director, Phil Smith, as well as several of our fiscal lookouts from around the country in states like Texas, Colorado, and Minnesota. But before we dive into today's discussion, let's kick off the program with our first segment, Facing the News, where we will take a few minutes to see what is going on in the world of fiscal policy this week. The White House is ramping up its funding battles with Congress as it prepares to ask for billions of dollars in rescissions or canceling previously approved spending authority in foreign aid. The package could be in excess of $4 billion, and some of the targeted programs include United Nations funding and aid to Central America. By submitting the rescissions request, targeted funds would be blocked for 45 legislative days. But if Congress doesn't vote to approve in that time frame, the funds will be released to be spent. However, as is the case with many of the administration's efforts to alter or curtail such funding, some lawmakers are challenging the administration's legal authority to take such actions so close to the end of the fiscal year, saying a 45-day freeze could effectively cancel the funds without lawmakers having a chance to vote. Even congressional Republicans that oversee foreign aid have urged the president to scrap the planned rescissions request. A Government Accountability Office opinion has previously said that canceling funding in this fashion would amount to an illegal, quote, impoundment or refusal to spend appropriated money. But the White House Office of Management and Budget said the 1974 budget law governing the appropriations process is silent on whether rescissions requests can be submitted so late in the fiscal year, and it notes there is precedent for such late requests. Come September, when Congress is back in session, elected leaders will have another chance to end the president's declared national emergency at the U.S.-Mexico border. The law permitting the executive power to divert funding for such an emergency permits Congress to hold another vote to end the declaration after 6 months, but it is not clear whether lawmakers will do so because they likely lack the two-thirds majority necessary to override a presidential veto of a resolution to end the emergency declaration. The president vetoed such a measure, which had bipartisan support, back in March. House Democrats have not included any new wall funding in their fiscal year 2020 appropriations bills. The Trump administration is making another run at reducing costs in the SNAP program, commonly referred to as food stamps. A pending rule from the Agricultural Department could do away with a deduction for home energy costs that can increase monthly benefits in programs like food stamps. The deduction, known as a standard utility allowance, is part of the low-income home energy assistance program. Critics of the deduction say it enables some families to take a larger deduction than they would be able to receive if they submitted the actual energy bills they paid. The White House estimates that the rule change would save $11.4 billion over a decade. The Congressional Budget Office last year estimated that a similar proposal would reduce monthly food stamp benefits for 560,000 households by an average of $84. Up next, I will be joined by Concord Coalition National Field Director Phil Smith and one of our fiscal lookouts in Minnesota, Joe Spartz. We'll be back after these short messages. Welcome back to Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman. I'm joined on the show by Phil Smith, Concord's National Field Director, and fiscal lookout Joe Spartz. Phil recruits and manages Concord's fiscal lookouts. He's helped conduct countless seminars, congressional and presidential town hall meetings, and public policy initiatives. He delivers speeches to a range of policy and civic organizations, colleges, universities, and financial planning groups, and he works extensively with the media. Phil has served as the COO for two state government agencies in Georgia. He's also served on the Washington staff of the late U.S. Representative Doug Barnard. And I'd like to throw this one in. In his younger days, I say that because Phil just celebrated a birthday, he was chosen as one of the top 40 under 40 by Atlanta Business Chronicle. Joe is president of the Greater St. Paul Building Owners and Managers Association. BOMA is a membership organization that primarily serves commercial real estate buildings and service-related providers. He's responsible for issue advocacy and government affairs, strategic direction, membership development and relations, economic development, and overall management of the association. Joe graduated from the University of Minnesota with a BA in political science, and he became involved with Concord back in 2017. Welcome to Facing the Future, Joe and Phil.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure having you both on the show, and I guess today's theme for Facing the Future is going to be very grassroots-oriented, and Joe, I wanted to have you on to talk about what you're doing in the great state of Minnesota. Let's start with why you got involved with the Concord Coalition in the first place, and why fiscal policy issues matter to you.
Okay, Chase. Personally, the way I look at getting involved in this issue is I kind of view it as like I'm on the Titanic, and I'm on the deck, and I'm looking out at the beautiful ocean, and off in the distance, I see this big old iceberg. And I just kind of noticed that the ship's heading right at that iceberg. And if it doesn't change course, the ship's going to sink. And, you know, I try to get people's attention, you know, whether it's, you know, passengers or crew members. But everybody's busy. They're having a good time. They can't be bothered. And so, you know, it gets kind of frustrating. And so I kind of liken our current situation to that, that, you know, if the country doesn't change course, the fiscal situation is going to be sinking our economy. So, you know, that's what motivates me to get involved, is knowing what the future will hold if we don't change course. So to a degree, it's kind of self-serving. You know, what would my own personal life be like? How would that be impacted by the fiscal crisis that would follow if we continue down the policies that we're currently following right now? But, you know, I also do it from a standpoint of, you know, my kids and my family and those I care about, how would they be impacted? You know, plus it's from a perspective of, you know, being patriotic and caring about my country. I mean, personally, for an individual to be aware of our situation, our financial situation, and not care about it or not want to get involved to do something about it, I kind of see it as negligence. That's kind of harsh, but the reality is if you knew that a teen was going to get in a car that had the brakes were leaking, brake fluid, and you're going to let him drive that, I mean, that'd be negligent on your part. And so we know what's going to happen to our country if, in fact, we don't deal with our financial and fiscal issues. And to just kind of ignore it then, to me, is negligent. So, you know, for a number of reasons, I think it's important to be involved, and that's why personally I'm motivated.
And Joe, to use your analogy, a ship heading toward an iceberg, when you're talking to friends or family or colleagues, what do you point out or highlight as the biggest issues, the most important issues that need to be addressed in the near term? Because obviously, if you're heading toward an iceberg, you're heading toward a big problem. So what do you put in people's lap as that big problem that really needs to be tackled in the near term?
Well, you know, when the issue comes up, I don't tend to be a heavy-handed person when I'm talking to friends or neighbors or family members about this issue. The way it typically comes up is when there's maybe some discussion about, you know, maybe there's a proposed tax cut in the news or there's proposed new spending in the news, and maybe people are talking about the particular program or the proposal, you know, I'm always the one to remind them, well, you know, how are we going to pay for that? You know, because I don't see how it's being paid for, and then remind them, you know, we already got this massive debt that we've established, and so you're just going to be adding on to that. And do you understand in the long term what kind of hard choices the nation will have to make, what we're going to have to be eliminating in terms of programs or additional tax burden we have to take on as a result of that? So I tend to get them to think more immediately about, you know, rather than just the gift, the program gift that's being laid out in front of them or the nation, to think about, well, what are the consequences of accepting this? Because there is a price to be paid, and far too often, you know, historically, we haven't really looked at that as individuals. We don't look at that. We just look at the particular spending program, or we just look at the potential benefit of the tax cut.
This is Facing the Future. I'm talking to Phil Smith, the Concord Coalition's National Field Director and one of Concord's Minnesota fiscal lookouts, Joe Spartz. We're discussing his approach when talking to friends and family about fiscal policy issues and why he cares about them so much. And I had a quick follow-up question there, Joe. Specifically, what drew you to Concord? I mean, there are several organizations that work on fiscal policy issues and from different perspectives, whether it's a moderate, liberal, more conservative viewpoint. Why work with Concord? Why take the affirmative step of being a fiscal lookout for us?
Well, you're right, Chase. There are other organizations, many good organizations involved in this particular cause. I personally have been aware of this issue for many years, but like most Americans, you know, I kind of played that ostrich game. You know, I had my head buried in the ground. And when I finally decided to do something about this issue, to get connected with it and get involved, you know, I actually got in touch with a fantastic local resource we have here in Minnesota, and that's former Congressman Tim Penny. And so I got in a conversation with him and told him, you know, what I was interested in, and he suggested that I reach out to, you know, Bob Bixby and Phil Smith with the Concord Coalition, and so we had some conversations, and that convinced me that Concord Coalition really was the group to be involved with that could drive some activity at the grassroots level, because that's what I was very interested in doing, is participating here locally in this state to get individuals more engaged and aware of this issue.
And Chase, if I could pipe in real fast and just congratulate Joe on really assembling a great group of Concord volunteers in Minnesota. I've seen firsthand, and I've visited him there. In many ways, he's kind of modeled it after our New Hampshire Concord Coalition Fiscal Advisory Committee, because I would say, you know, our New Hampshire group is so super strong and well-organized. And Joe, you've been able to find some like-minded people there that share your concerns from a broad array of backgrounds to form our Minnesota Concord Coalition Fiscal Advisory Council. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, let me kind of give a little background on that, Phil. Because you were part of, you know, we can put part of the blame on you for this. You know, we kind of got involved with this, the whole debt issue, back in 2017. I was in some conversations with Phil, and so what we decided we wanted to do was put together a program, and in fact, my organization, BOMA, along with local chambers and a few other entities, pulled together to have a program that had a panel of Phil was on the panel. We had Congressman Tim Penny on the panel, and we also had from the University of Minnesota, the Economics Department Chair, Christopher Phelan. So, you know, we put it out to the business community, had 75, 80 people participate in that. So it was a really nice program. Phil did a great job in terms of laying out the issue. All the speakers did a great job. And as a result of that event, there were a handful of folks who stepped forward and said that, you know, they were, I guess, so moved, or, you know, their awareness was raised that they wanted to not just leave there and then it's like, okay, you know, let's hope somebody takes care of this. They want to actually get involved. And so a group of us then began talking about what we potentially could be doing, and in fact, we formed the Concord Coalition Minnesota group. And so from that then, in conversations with Phil, we ran a principles and priorities event. And Phil, you can talk more about what the principles and priorities is all about, but you know, we did that in 2018, again, at the University of Minnesota. They were very, very generous in terms of providing space and all that. Again, a really nice event. That worked out very, very well. And in fact, we are doing that again this year. We are in conversations with one of our local Congress folks, Congressman Dean Phillips. And so it looks like in October we're going to be running that event again with working with his office to kind of put the word out to his constituents and run one of those programs. So maybe, Phil, you could talk a little bit about what the principles and priorities is.
Sure. Principles and priorities is one of my favorite things that we do, the Concord Coalition. It's our group exercise where people come together in teams and basically assemble a 10-year federal budget. And one of the best we've ever done was indeed at the University of Minnesota. It was just a great venue for it. And former Congressman Tim Penny, who is on the board of the Concord Coalition, as you mentioned, he's been at these events that we've done there. And so he was able to come on and give some introductory remarks. But then citizens, a broad group of citizens from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area came together and were able to put together a federal budget plan to reduce the federal budget deficit over the next 10 years. And we had a good turnout, and Joe, I appreciate you giving me some credit, but I've got to tell you, when you're trying to do an event on the ground up there, there's nothing like having a group of leaders like you assembled with the Minnesota Concord Coalition Fiscal Advisory Council that really just did a fantastic job. And Kay and so many of the people that you've brought in together there have just done a really good job, and you've become very quickly a model for what we can do in other states. So keep up the good work in Minnesota.
We're working on it.
And Joe, we have time just for one more question, and I always like to try and get the perspective of our fiscal lookouts from around the country. And you made a really strong statement earlier on in the segment when you compared a lack of interest or lack of action on these issues to a certain level of negligence. So from your perspective in Minnesota, if you're making the case to elected leaders on acting now or acting soon on these issues, what would that case look like?
Well, we were just in Congressman Phillips' office the other day and talking to them about it. And so, you know, I'm an optimist, Chase, but, you know, what I was frank with them about is I said, you know, there are few elected leaders that are willing to put their neck out, put their neck on the line. Because, you know, they recognize that with this issue, when you really talk about solutions to voters out there, you're talking about, you know, increasing taxes, you're talking about cutting spending, and that's beautiful political fodder for an opponent of any of these congressmen. And so most are self-serving. They want to get reelected, and so many of them are not willing to go ahead and take that risk. And so, you know, the conversation that we were having with Congressman Phillips' office was that we want to help you build awareness with your constituents about how important this issue is so that you have support from them when you become a leader on this issue in Congress. And so the principles and priorities is a good start, and you know what? They are all over it. They recognize the value that could provide and present the congressman as a leader on this issue. Especially, again, within his district. And so I think there needs to be recognition beyond just, with activists out there, beyond just saying this is the right thing to do. There needs to be recognition. Bottom line, you have to get Congress involved in this issue. And so therefore, what's going to motivate them? Well, they need to have an electorate that has some degree of awareness and support of taking some hard measures. And so that's the hard work at the grassroots level, is building that awareness among voters and the constituents to say, you know what, if my congressperson begins making these recommendations that are good for the nation's long-term fiscal health, you know, we need to sign on to it.
As we were talking, I just got an email from the University of Minnesota at Duluth requesting that someone come up there and run our budget exercise. How kind
of that's fantastic.
That is indeed fantastic, and I liked your call to action there, Joe. This is Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman, and you've been listening to me, Phil Smith, Concord's National Field Director, and one of Concord's Minnesota fiscal lookouts, Joe Spartz. We discussed Joe's approach when talking to friends, family, and colleagues about fiscal policy, why he cares about such issues, and his work as a fiscal lookout in the great state of Minnesota. After the break, Phil will be back, and joining us will be Brian Carter, one of Concord's fiscal lookouts in Colorado. Thank you both for joining the show.
Thanks, Chase.
you.
We'll be back after these short messages. Welcome back to Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman. I'm joined on the show by Phil Smith, the Concord Coalition's National Field Director and one of Concord's fiscal lookouts in both the state of Colorado and Wyoming, Brian Carter. Phil, I've already introduced on today's show, so I'm going to jump right to Brian. Brian served in the U.S. Marines, worked in the private sector in sales, manufacturing, and consulting, and in economic development in the public sector. He has degrees in history, political science, business, and public administration. He lives in Fort Collins, Colorado, with his wife and three children. Welcome back to Facing the Future, Phil, and for the first time, Brian.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Happy to have you both on the show, and I think I'll kick off today's segment, which the whole show is very focused on grassroots and what Concord is doing around the nation. Brian, my first question is, what got you involved or interested in fiscal policy issues at the federal level?
Chase, I think it started about 15 years ago in grad school when I was studying for my degree in public administration. I read Pete Peterson's book, Running on Empty. And I think that kind of dialed me into the fact that that we have a problem and we need to get our hands around it.
Well, that certainly makes sense. I've read several books over the years, including Warren Rubman's book, Combat, that really sparked my interest in fiscal policy. Are there any specific issues within the fiscal policy realm that have really drawn your interest or concern you greatly?
Well, one of the things that I believe strongly is that when we talk about fiscal policy, we're really talking about everything that the government does from the standpoint of whether or not you are most passionate about the environment or national defense or housing or healthcare. All of those use financial resources of the government that at their source come from the people through some form of taxation. And so what I saw in issue after issue, whether people were saying we need more money for this or we should spend less money on this, we're talking about fiscal policy on all of these issues. So if your big thing is national defense, at some point you have to come back to fiscal policy because whether it's the equipment that we use, the personnel that we maintain, or our strategic commitments, you know, all of those take resources. And the same is true for all other issues. So what I saw was a cross-cutting issue that, frankly, whatever you're passionate about, you got to come back and talk about the sources and uses of funds, and I just see this as foundational to all of those debates.
And aside from seeing the big picture, the connection between all of these issues that are related at the national level in terms of fiscal policy, what is the primary reason in your mind why elected leaders should act on these issues and why voters should care about them?
There's a couple things there that I think really do matter. Right now, most folks don't realize that we're only paying for about 80% of what the federal government does and that we're borrowing that other piece. And so that represents a long-term threat because if folks are not actually feeling the full cost of paying for the government that we have, then you can be forgiven for thinking that, well, we should spend less or we should tax even less. Some folks say we should spend more or tax even more, but at its core, we're not actually feeling the full cost of the government as it is. When you layer on top of that the increases that are essentially on autopilot that are going to be required in healthcare and in Social Security, again, we don't have a clear signal back to we the people in terms of how much does all this cost. And I think that as a result, both representatives at the state level or in Washington, D.C., because their constituents don't feel the full cost of the government, it's easy to have conversations that frankly miss the mark in terms of is this program actually worth it or not when people aren't quite sure how much it costs. If I could use an example, let's say that you have a dedicated tax stream as we do to help support Medicare. Well, if that's not covering all the costs of Medicare, then it's difficult to know whether or not you should raise that and whether or not people would support it because they're not actually in touch with the actual cost as it is today. You could make an argument, well, we need to allow that level of taxation on payroll taxes or Medicare taxes or Social Security taxes. We need to let all those float so that they pay for those programs fully. One could make that argument. Well, people in that situation would feel the full burden of the cost of those programs. But at the same time, you would have this this up and down yo-yo effect on the tax rates. And so we're basically at a point, I think, where because folks aren't quite sure what we're borrowing for, we're borrowing 20 cents of every dollar. If you're not sure if it goes for program A, B, C, D, E, or F, then you're really not quite sure what any of those programs cost. And as a result, it just gets very, very difficult to debate whether or not you should spend more or spend less.
And Brian, I want Phil to be able to jump in, but I had one quick follow-up to get a little more specific here. We've been talking about high-level issues. Are there any particular policy issues that really jump out to voters in Colorado or Wyoming as it pertains to national fiscal policy that has really maybe driven your interest or involvement in terms of being a fiscal lookout with the Concord Coalition?
I don't think there's a specific issue in Colorado or Wyoming that has caused me to jump in and be a fiscal lookout. I from my standpoint, it's much more of a looking at the whole ball game and seeing that we're on an unsustainable path and that needs to be addressed.
Brian, it's Phil Smith here. We've been fortunate in Colorado and Wyoming to have done a lot of events over the years, from Jackson Hole down to Colorado Springs, multiple members of Congress and so forth. We did an event in Boulder with Congressman Jared Polis, and I'll say, you know, right after that event, somehow he got elected governor. So see what happens when you work with the Concord Coalition. Big things can happen to you, right? But you've also been in contact with Congressman Neguse, who's the freshman member there who took former Congressman Polis, now Governor Polis' old seat. And you also have an event coming up in Fort Collins that I thought I might ask you to tell us a little bit about. I'm excited to hear what we've got planned out there.
Sure thing. On September 5th at Everyday Joe's Coffee House in downtown Fort Collins, we're partnering with the Strayer Center for Public Leadership at Colorado State University and with the mayor's office in Fort Collins, and we're going to be conducting the Principles and Priorities workshop on that evening, and we're inviting seniors in high school, undergrad students, graduate students, young professionals, business owners, retirees. We're also inviting a strong cross-section of public officials at various levels, the city levels, county level, state level, and at the federal level. And what we really want to have is a cross-section of society, both in terms of roles that people play in society and their professions, and also in terms of age, and really be able to recreate the dynamic that you have when Congress sits, in terms of here are, you know, people from all over, all walks of life, and they represent different parts of the country, and they all have to sit in a room together and make hard decisions about what we're going to spend money on and not spend money on. So we want to create that. Our invitation says be a member of Congress for a night, and we hope to have a great turnout on September 5th.
This is Facing the Future. I'm talking to Phil Smith, Concord's National Field Director, and one of Concord's Colorado and Wyoming fiscal lookouts, Brian Carter. We're discussing Brian's approach in those states as a fiscal lookout and why he cares about fiscal policy issues. And a follow-up I have related to what Phil was asking you about, Brian, what are you hoping to accomplish as a fiscal lookout? What's your ultimate goal in that role with our organization?
I feel strongly, and I believe strongly, that in a government that's a representative democracy like we have, that people have to wrestle with issues themselves. You know, if you dial back the clock 200 or 300 years, regular citizens weren't expected to wrestle with the big questions of governance. But in a representative government like we have, I think people need to wrestle with those issues, because the votes that are taken on the floor of the House and the Senate and bills that are signed by the President, etc., those reflect the priorities that come from people that are voting for the representatives that are sent there in the first place. And so what I want to accomplish is a higher level of awareness that we, the people, are ultimately responsible for the issues and for the results of the government, and that while it is sometimes fun to point fingers at the folks that have been elected, at the end of the day, they have been sent there at our behest, at our bidding, and they're doing the job that they think their constituents want. And so if you really want to move the needle there, I think that it is at some point important to move the needle in the mind of the public. And so my personal goal is that we can move the needle in the eye of the public, in the mind of the public, in terms of we need to look at fiscal policy, because it is the foundation to whatever program you care about. Even if two people care about two different topics, even if they have vastly different priorities, I think they could both agree that having a strong fiscal foundation is important, separate from their disagreements. So I think it's an issue that you can bring people together on. I think it's kind of like if you've got two folks sitting on an airplane, they might want to go to different places. They may not have ultimate destinations in terms of the trips they're taking, but both of them are going to agree that they want the plane that they're riding on to be well-functioning and for the dials and the gauges in the cockpit to work. So I think it's an area where we can bring folks together. What I want to achieve is a higher level of awareness among we the people that then gets translated into the priorities that their representatives take when they go to Capitol Hill.
And just to wrap this up, Brian, because unfortunately we're running out of time, I like to get the perspective of our fiscal lookouts from around the country. So I'll ask you this. From the Colorado/Wyoming perspective, if you're talking to your elected leaders, how do you make the pitch that we the people are responsible for these issues and the response of government? How do you, in this era of relatively partisan politics, how do you bring them to the table and make that pitch in the first instance?
I first acknowledge to them that they always operate in a pretty tight bandwidth in terms of what their constituency and their base kind of is looking for of where they can go. And so I acknowledge that they are in the hot seat, and that if they stray too far outside of the electability of whatever their territory or their district is, then they're in the danger zone. So after acknowledging that, I say, look, why don't you come back to your constituency with a better, more granular level of details and be in an informational role? Because for a whole lot of folks, for a whole lot of citizens, simply being informed that we are borrowing 20 cents of every dollar that we spend, more or less, and that we're not doing it for wars and we're not doing it for expanding the size of the United States or because our economy is in the tank, but that we're funding the routine expenses of the government with debt, and that is not sustainable. For a lot of folks, that does just move the needle, just being aware of it. So what I try to do with them after acknowledging that they're in a tough spot is say, why don't you put on the hat of just bringing information to the table and kind of helping the people understand the numbers you're having to wrestle with on Capitol Hill. And that can be an example of representatives providing information to we the people, and we the people then being able to flow back a more informed sense of direction to those that they elect. So I ask them to put on the hat of being an advocate for the facts, and then allowing the facts to shape people's expectations and shape people's tolerance of being able to consider other options.
This is Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman. You've been listening to me, Phil Smith, Concord's National Field Director, and Concord's Colorado and Wyoming Fiscal Lookout, Brian Carter. We discussed Brian's approach in Colorado and Wyoming as a lookout and why he cares about fiscal policy issues, as well as the pitch he'd made to elected leaders. Thanks for joining the show, Phil and Brian.
Thank you, Chase.
Thanks, Chase.
After the break, Phil will return once more for a conversation with one of our Texas fiscal lookouts, Tejas Vakil. We'll be back after these short messages. Welcome back to Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman. I'm joined on the show by Phil Smith, Concord's National Field Director, and one of Concord's Texas fiscal lookouts, Tejas Vakil. Tejas has spent 36 years in business as a large company executive, a small business owner, and even an entrepreneur. He was born in India and came to the U.S. as a graduate student, living here for 37 years and in Texas for 22 of those years. He has an MBA in marketing, an MS in computer science, and a bachelor's in chemical engineering. He and his wife have been married 33 years and have a son. Welcome to Facing the Future, Tejas, and welcome back, Phil.
Thanks, Chase. Really happy to
be
here.
Chase.
Well, I'm happy to have you on the show, Tejas, and Phil, obviously having you back for the third time today. I've dominated a lot of the conversations in the prior interviews, so I'm actually going to roll over to you, Phil, and give you the honor of asking the first question.
Well, thank you, Chase. I appreciate it, and it's exciting to talk to our fiscal lookout from around the country. And Tejas, I want to thank you for all the help that you give us in Texas, and you've even traveled to Washington with your wife, Jay Sheree, to talk about Concord Coalition issues, fiscal policy, to members of Congress. So thank you for all that you've done. And I guess my first question would be, you're a super smart and an incredibly successful guy. There's a lot of things you could be spending your time doing. What was it that attracted you to fiscal policy in general and the Concord Coalition?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to do this. I think this is very important, not only for the country today, but also, you know, moving forward. But fiscal policy is directly related to the governance of the country and, you know, how the government spends money and how it collects money, you know, directly affects, you know, all the citizens. And the reason that I was sort of really interested right now, or I won't, more than interested, I would say the reason for concern is that the national debt has been growing out of control for the last couple of decades. And unfortunately, right now, the demographics of the country are moving in the wrong direction. You know, unlike the 1990s, which was really the last time that we had an opportunity to reduce the national debt. And at that time, the opportunity was because the baby boomers were coming into their prime productivity years. We had a dividend due to technology productivity, due to the first use of PCs. We had a peace dividend due to the end of the Cold War. You know, all of those demographics are now unfortunately reversed or moving in the opposite direction. Baby boomers are retiring and will require more benefits, you know, health and other benefits, and they're not going to be contributing to the economy as much. We have yet to see another productivity boom from technology similar to the 90s. And given the current set of global challenges, we'll probably need to expand, not shrink, our defense spending. And so all of these basically put a greater strain on the federal budget, all while the interest on the national debt becomes an even bigger issue. And unfortunately, if we are heading to another recession, even if we didn't head into a recession, you would have to drive national GDP growth at greater than 3 to 3.5%, as far as the eye can see, just in order to manage the existing debt. And the problem is we're adding almost $1 trillion to that every year. So a sensible fiscal policy not only meets today's challenges, but secures the future for coming generations. And unfortunately, we are failing on both counts.
And Tejas, just to follow up on that, you mentioned some really big ticket items, very big picture policy issues. When you're talking to voters in Texas, how do you relate these issues to them on a more personal level?
The big thing that when I talk to them, you know, I talk about the fact that at the end of the day, the elected leaders or our elected leaders are playing with our money. You know, this isn't play money that is, you know, dropped like manna from heaven. You know, I think as George Will, one of the conservative commentators, says, you know, there are only two ways to pay for the budget, either with today's money or with tomorrow's money, but it's still our money. And so when I talk about that with the voters, I ask them to do some simple math. You know, I said, okay, let's live in a fantasy land for a few minutes. You know, even if our debt stays at the current level, which means that, you know, as far as the eye can see, we are going to do balanced budget. And let's assume that we can get consistent 3% GDP growth for, you know, let's say the next 20, 25 years. It will still take us 23 years for the national debt to become 50% of the GDP, which means that our money is increasingly being spent on managing that debt as opposed to doing the things that we want to do. So I try and relate it to, you know, them. I'm saying, look, forget your political persuasion. Whether you are from the left and you want more infrastructure spending or, you know, free this and free that, or you are from the right and you want more defense spending, we won't have discretionary spending until we contain both the existing spending and we do something about the revenue shortfall.
And Tejas, you just mentioned, I think, a really important piece in all this, the perspectives that you can have on pretty key fiscal policy issues that range from the left to the right or somewhere in the middle. There's lots of organizations that talk about these issues from those different perspectives. What prompted you to get specifically involved with the Concord Coalition and become a lookout in Texas?
Great question. Part of the main reason is that, you know, in this sort of, you know, hyper-partisan atmosphere that we have, I think that it is important that the awareness of the national debt be done by an organization that is both nonpartisan as well as data-driven. And the Concord Coalition meets both of those requirements. The Concord Coalition does not take political sides. You know, it focuses on the facts, which is important. And that is what attracted me to the Concord Coalition. And I think that, you know, by every time I go out and talk to potential voters or, you know, in the community, I stand up and say, hey, I'm not representing any political party or view. I just want to present the facts as the Concord Coalition has. That is what's good about the Concord Coalition.
This is Facing the Future. I'm talking to Phil Smith, Concord's National Field Director, and one of Concord's Texas fiscal lookouts, Tejas Vakil. We're discussing Tejas's approach when talking to friends and family, why he cares about fiscal policy issues, and his work as a lookout for the Concord Coalition. And as is my tendency, Phil, I started dominating the questions yet again, so I'm going to kick it back to you. What do you have to ask of Tejas now?
No, you're fine. I appreciate it. This conversation is amazing, and it really, I think Tejas is making some really, really strong points that people need to hear. And Tejas is a good spokesperson for us there. Now, Tejas, you're based in Austin, but Texas is a really big state. And some people might even call it a whole other country in some ways.
Texans like to believe that.
So in your travels around the state, interesting things are afoot in Texas right now. And the Concord Coalition is really super strong in states like New Hampshire and Iowa. And a lot of people in the past may have written Texas off. It's a big state, obviously. It delivers a lot of electoral votes in the Electoral College. But things are afoot in Texas right now, and this probably isn't your grandfather's Texas anymore. So we might have some opportunities with newer politicians coming on. I noticed that Congressman Will Hurd announced his retirement not long after you met with his staff, Tejas. So I'm not sure what you guys
think. I don't know. You know, I don't know if it was something we said.
But he represents the border district, and then also Mac Thornberry up in the Panhandle. We've run exercises with him before. We used to have our national debt clock with Lloyd, with Lloyd Doggett, and I know you've been in contact with him. Hopefully in the future we'll be able to work with some of these. You see some of these members as maybe some people we can work with at the Concord Coalition to help educate people about these issues and to help move the ball forward.
You know, Phil, I do. But at the same time, you know, I wouldn't yet say that I am super optimistic. And I'll tell you, it's not because any of them say that they're not interested in this subject. On the contrary, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, all the members of Congress that we've talked to or their staff, they are all on board saying, oh, absolutely, we are concerned about this and we want to address it. The problem is they don't address it. You know, and that's why I'm saying it's, you know, it doesn't matter what political persuasion you're from. This has been an equal opportunity set of offenses. And so, yes, I hope to work with them, but what we have to see is a change in their behavior when it comes to voting on legislation. And to be honest, I don't think that will happen unless the voters themselves get passionate and hold them accountable. Unless the voters make it a priority to look at our elected officials and say, you know, I want to judge exactly how you voted on this spending, on major spending program, or on major tax issues, or on entitlement reform, it's not going to happen. The reality is, we can blame Congress certainly for the issue, but at the end of the day, the voters need to educate themselves and start getting passionate, because we are the ones that put these people in office.
That is the heart of our mission at the Concord Coalition, isn't it? I mean,
absolutely.
We're founded to arm citizens with information and good data. So I think you make a really strong point, Tejas.
And unfortunately, gentlemen, we're running short on time, so we've got time for just one more question, Tejas, and it'll probably have to be a pretty quick answer. But I've asked this question of two of our other fiscal lookouts in earlier segments. You just mentioned that sometimes elected leaders give mouth service to some of these issues and don't really work to address them. When you're talking to these elected leaders, how do you make the pitch to them from either the Texas perspective or the voter perspective in general? What's the call to action you give them when you're sitting there talking to them?
You know, the call to action is both a long-term and a short-term one, or, you know, sort of an emotional, the long-term emotional appeal is, look, what you are doing is you're playing with the future of our kids and grandkids and the future of the nation, and you need to start acting responsibility. The short-term piece is that you know, we would like to get you on the record of supporting this, and we want to make sure that that we educate voters to hold you responsible. Now, I don't necessarily say it hold you responsible, but, you know, we want you to be accountable to the voters, and we want you to, if you believe as passionately as you say you do, then please act on it and also, you know, start to make the case in front of your own voters that you are supporting this.
This is Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman. You've been listening to me, Phil Smith, Concord's National Field Director, and one of Concord's Texas fiscal lookouts, Tejas Vakil. We discussed Tejas's approach when talking about fiscal policy issues and just recently how he makes the pitch to elected leaders. Thanks for joining the show, Phil and Tejas.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chase.
You've been Facing the Future. I'm Chase Hageman. Thanks for listening.